Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. Happy Summer House Reunion Day to all who celebrate. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and I hope everyone had a fantastic long weekend. Today on the show, we're talking about a bunch of Bravo shows with Ryan O'Connell, whose new book, Inspiration Porn, is out today. As always, I put a link in the show notes in case you want to order it. Ryan wrote and created a great Netflix show that I watched back in 2019 called Special. It ran for 2 seasons. And I loved his first book just by looking at him, which was a novel that came out a few years ago. I interviewed Ryan during my old job at Yahoo, I think for Special. So it's been a minute, but it was really nice to reconnect with him. And he came prepared with a ton of hot takes and thoughts on Summer House and the Valley, Southern Hospitality, Beverly Hills, Rhode Island. We talked about a bunch of different shows and we had a great time. And he honestly had me laughing for like an hour straight. So I really think you'll appreciate this one. And speaking of Beverly Hills, Kyle was out here commenting on social media around the upfronts when it was not mentioned as a renewed show, that the show is not on pause, contrary to speculation. And now we are getting a bunch of contract rumors. So Bravo and Cocktails, which is basically like sort of the Dumois of the Bravo world, they reported that Kyle, Erica, Sutton, Bowes, and Rachel will be back full time next season. They said Amanda was asked back, but most likely will decline. Crystal Minkoff is back in the mix, and her role is being decided as she has been having meetings with Alex Baskin, who's the head of production company. Jennifer Tilly will also be back and expect 2 strong newbies. Are you ready for this? Lori Loughlin and Emma Greed are in the mix. Dorit is being put on pause. Now, all of this is with a grain of salt, right? But Lori Loughlin, who obviously very famous actress, Full House, she also went to jail because of the college admissions scandal. That would be tea. She recently got divorced from her longtime husband. Emma Greed, she is a really successful businesswoman. She is sort of behind a lot of the Kardashian brands. She's very, again, I think she's really smart, but I don't know if she's somebody who I see getting into the mix in terms of like the drama ever. She seems like she's honest, even kind of contrary to that. Like, I think that she would be kind of holier than thou about it. That's sort of what my read on her is in terms of joining Housewives. I like her in general, but she doesn't really strike me as Housewives material. So that would surprise me if she actually ended up joining the show personally. And then Dorit being put on pause would be like a huge deal to me. I feel like there's a lot. I know that a lot of people feel really strongly anti-Dorit after the reunion, but there's a lot of stuff that would just be sort of dead-ended if we didn't get to read back on the show. So that would be a really big decision. But then a day later, Bravo and Cocktails published a clarification email that they got. So this is what that one said. Dorit is not officially on pause yet. Half of the producers want her back. Producers reached out to Lori Loughlin a few months ago, but nothing was confirmed as of Friday morning. Kyle, Sutton, Rachel, Kathy, and Jennifer are currently the only women set to return. Erica's status is 50-50. Producers want more from her, in parentheses, son, boyfriend, legal issues. Contrary to Amanda's claim, she would return but just wants to raise and knows how to get it. That is alluding to Amanda saying on Threads in replies to people that like, why would she go back? It was a miserable experience, but more on Amanda in a second. This email also said that Crystal is open to returning and producers believe she would make sense with this cast. Crystal filmed a lot on Jeff Lewis's new show, which is set to premiere later this year. Take that as you want. Denise Richards remains on producers' radars, and Kyle initially wanted out, but ultimately decided against adding more change to her life after conversations with Alex Baskin. So this email to me is giving like insider person. This person is like very much in tune with production. That's what it sounds like, at least to me. I'm really here for Crystal returning. I've been advocating for that since she left, basically, because I also think that she is connected to a good amount of people that could be also good for the show. Like, you know, she's friends with Tracy Tudor from Million Dollar Listing, who had drama with Dorit. And I think she'd also just be a good housewife. Crystal has a lot of young, kind of fresh friends. I think that Crystal has really come into her own since leaving the show, you know, just via, again, being on Jeff Lewis, her podcast with Cynthia. I think she feels more confident and emboldened, and that would be great for the show. And she also has like history with them at this point, so there would be stuff to talk about. Denise, I would be up for her to return, honestly. I think that she's had a lot going on. You know, we've heard this about Kyle like being convinced by Alex Baskin yet again to return. you know, that's sort of what her friend Justin Sylvester alluded to when he was on Morally Corrupt a couple weeks ago, when he said that she's tried to leave and they've always convinced her to stay because there's no show without her. So I don't know. But this is all, again, all of this is grain of salt, but I wanted to share this with you because they felt pretty notable. And then I said, we'll circle back to Amanda. Amanda posted a DM that she got from Rihanna on Threads. The DM said, "No, no, nope, no quitting. You're going to have your redemption. I promise you, we need more of you." And Amanda wrote alongside that, "Wait, if Rihanna says I have to do a second season, then do I have to do a second season? If the queen says..." And here's the thing, that blind item about Amanda is correct, I'm sure, because it's like Amanda is no dummy. She is a businesswoman, so she knows how this works. She's playing to the court of a public opinion, trying to drum up enthusiasm for her to return to help her negotiation for more money. So if this is how she's doing it, that's how she's doing it. I am also an advocate for her to return. But as you'll also hear in my chat with Ryan, he is not. So who knows what's going to happen? But again, I wanted to make sure that I shared these updates with you guys from over Memorial Day weekend. And I guess the other big thing, obviously, to note about Beverly Hills that happened on Friday is that Erica's trial over her $25 million lawsuit was supposed to begin this week. It's no longer going to happen because they settled out of court last minute on Friday, or that news came out on Friday, at least. So, yeah, I mean, you know, again, the blind item said they want more from Erica, and one of the things is legal issues. That's a big legal issue no longer on her radar. So again, who knows? For now, keep listening to my chat with Ryan O'Connell. Order his book, Inspiration Porn Essays, wherever you get your books. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you are listening to us right now. We'll be back later this week. I want to gab. All right. Today, we're gabbing with Ryan O'Connell, an Emmy-winning creator and writer of the Netflix series Special. He's also the author of one of my favorite books the past few years, Just by Looking at Him. And now he's the author of Inspiration Porn Essays, which is out on May 26th. Ryan, thanks for being here. It's great to see you. How are you?
I feel so much better now knowing that I have a place to put all my Bravo like things I need to like exercise like demons. You know what I mean? I have a lot to get out. I mean, like I feel like once a month, it's like my version of getting a period. I feel like I need to start a podcast discussing Bravo. Do you know what I mean?
It's so funny because it's like, I can't even relate to that because I'm like, I don't know what it's like to watch Bravo and not have an outlet to just dump it all out.
So now you, so feel empathy for me. Like it's really hard. Yeah.
No, I have but to like it's. It's one of those things you want to talk about all the time.
I have to live in group chats. I have to have phone calls with my girlfriends. Like, that's where I'm living. And I have to listen to other podcasts about Bravo. I mean, this is not okay.
It's not okay. No, I don't, it's a huge burden for you to be living with. Do you have dedicated Bravo group chats or?
Well, I try not to be on many group chats because I hate them. I am much more
you a voice. Both.
I'm a voice memo girly, and I'm also a like original OG phone call. I love a phone call, honey. It's in my blood. It's in my DNA. So like, I mean, just last night I called up my best girlfriend and we talked about Bravo for like 45 minutes. So like, that's where I want to live. The group chats are happening. I am not really weighing in because again, that's not my medium and that's not my journey. But I hold space. Mm-hmm.
Totally. And that's honestly, you being a phone call person is inspiring because I'm not a phone call person, but I've like, but I like when people call me, I'm just not good at picking up the phone and making those calls.
Are you scared when someone calls you? Do you like go, oh, like, you know
sometimes,
what I mean?
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah.
Honey, grow up.
I literally grow up. It's very like, I don't know if I'm not Gen Z, I'm younger, I guess I'm millennial, but it's something of my generation that we're not, my age group, it's like not, we're not phone call people.
I think we need to bring it back. I think we need to bring it back. Yeah, because it's like, we're socially feral. Like, if we can't pick up the phone and talk to people, what's going on? Do you know what I mean?
I know. And I guess sometimes I'm like, I spend all day talking, doing this.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
But, you know, well, there's a happy medium somewhere in there, I feel like.
We'll find it. We'll unpack it.
When you called your friend last night and talked about Bravo, what were you guys talking about?
Oh, Summer House, of course. Yeah.
Okay, good. I was gonna think we start there, obviously. It's kind of the
summer.
The...
Yeah, well, Summer House has me in a chokehold like it does everybody else. I have so many thoughts and feelings. I feel like I wanted to start by saying I feel really icky post Scandoval. We were in a collective psychosis with Scandoval. We treated Rachel like she was the scum of the G-damn earth. The poor thing is now doing sound baths in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what I mean? Like we were not okay as a society. And we projected onto these people that we had parasocial connections with. And it went too far. I feel icky. I feel complicit. I feel like that was not, like, we were not in a good headspace collectively then. So I really want to go into the Amanda and Wes thing being like, okay, I can't go hard the way that I did last time because these are real people, LOL. They're not characters in a video game. And I think it gets really, really, like, I think we forget that. I think that they become avatars to us. Mm-hmm. And I think also the Amanda and Wes thing is in Sierra is not one-to-one at all with Scandoval.
No, it's not.
Whatsoever. But it's interesting because, like, I actually have a lot of empathy for Amanda and Kyle. And watching them this season, for them both, the dynamic of Amanda and Kyle is fascinating, which is that Kyle, because he is a straight male who doesn't know how to communicate and his first stop is always rage, always destroys himself. Even though I think when he talks about, you know, the problems in our relationship have to do with intimacy, connection, communication are very real. Meanwhile, I think Amanda takes some weird kind of solace in being in this horrible Groundhog Day with her husband. I think that there's comfort in her feeling victimized by her husband and not feeling compelled to change anything, to stay frozen, because I think she's too scared to do anything.
What it looks like without that, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I think it's very much like, and the way that she kind of has people do her, like, do her bidding in a way, like, all the people will talk to Kyle and say the things that she won't say, and she'll get this kind of perverse delight in seeing him get torn to shreds. And then she gets to be the victor again. It's kind of not chic. Like, I you know what I mean? I think it's not binary at all. I don't think that there's a clear victim or hero in that whole situation.
No, I mean, and even in the finale of this week, like,
oh,
we've seen Sierra bring up the separation thing twice, once directly to Kyle, had this other conversation with him. But then in Amanda and Kyle's final conversation on the stoop, she's like, yeah, she brought that up. Like, I don't...
I said we were in a good place. And I was like, did you? Like, I was like, rewind the tape. Well,
yeah, roll footage.
So, like, that to me... So, I think it's very complicated. And then we have the Amanda, West, and Sierra of it all, which is obviously, like everybody else, I'm watching this with new eyes, and I am horrified. Like, it's bad. It's unequivocally bad. I think that Amanda has really low self-esteem. I mean, there's no other way. I don't know how else you really justify what she's doing.
It's very clear.
Yeah, she can't be alone. So I do feel actually a lot of empathy for Amanda, weirdly. Like, I'm like, oh, you're not okay. For you to do this, you're not okay. And I also don't think she's like some like secret sociopath mastermind. I don't think that there's anything. I think that she's just a girl who can't be alone. I just truly think that's what it is. West, on the other hand, I'm a little bit like, something ain't right. Like, we're missing some chips with that boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he's lacking some sort of awareness. And I truly think he is all in it to be famous. I think that, like, he looks at Sierra and he's actually filled with rage towards her because, like, his popularity is tied up in how Sierra perceives him. So she holds a lot of power over him that I think he fucking hates her for. And you know what I mean?
That's a really good read. No, I think that's really accurate. And he showed some of that resentment, or he spoke to some of that resentment in that coffee date they had a couple episodes ago. But
yes,
it's deeper than that. And it levels up to a higher. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think seeing them like make out this episode, oh my God, I felt so bad. It's like, here Sierra is being messy. She's never messy.
Yeah.
She always protects herself. She's letting her armor down for this Bozo the Clown. and we just know how it's going to end. It's tough.
But is your read on it? Because my read on the West aspect of it is that, like, you know, he was waiting in these waters, but he never, I don't think they planned to bring it public, but they got caught, so they kind of had to. And now he's sort of, I think, stuck in the Amanda relationship. I don't think he wanted to have a full-blown relationship with her, but now he can't get out of it. Right now.
Well, now they're each other's life rafts because Everyone hates them. They're the only ones that can understand what they're going through. They're each other's allies. The world has turned against them. But I agree. There's no way that relationship has legs, and there's no way that West has the emotional maturity or desire to see that relationship through.
But Amanda,
Amanda famously is really good at sticking with bad situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, here's the deal. I think a lot of Bravo shows should just be called "Are Straight People Okay?" Like, literally, I mean, that's
one of your essays.
One of my essays.
Inspiration.
But, like,
porn.
Literally, like, I watched The Valley, I watched Summer House. I'm like, straight people are so profoundly unwell. Like, they, like, Amanda and Kyle, let's be clear, because I've been watching from the very beginning. There was no, like, honeymoon period with this couple.
No, there really wasn't.
Like, they always didn't like each other. It was very weird. It was, like, always fraught with conflict. Like, I never really understood what their connection was. I never understood what any of it was. It was so weird. Like, to be with someone who you actively despise, or at least it seems like that on camera, for multiple seasons, and seeing that being reflected back at you, seeing that dynamic and seeing it be dissected, it's kind of nuts. Like, straight people have a kink for being miserable, like, truly.
And that's the life lesson of watching Bravo.
I mean, truly, meanwhile, like, you know, across to the Valley, meanwhile, in the 818, I mean, that is, like, peak.
That's darkness.
That is, like, Cassavetes, A Woman Under the Influence. Like, it is bad. It is, like, what's happening over there is, like, really dark.
Yeah, and it's, like, that's where it's, like, the Amanda and Kyle thing. Obviously, it's dark, but, like, when you compare it to the Valley, it's not even, doesn't even level to that at all, because there's no kids involved. They have sort of a New York sensibility about it, so it's a little, it lands differently. The LA-ness of the Valley also
Amanda and Kyle are a rom-com compared to the rom-trom that is the Valley. Like, truly, like, it is, like, they are having postpartum, they're having depression, they're having infidelity, all while, like, sitting in some weird strip mall getting their nails done. I mean, it's
in
bad.
In 95 degree heat. Yeah, it's bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I never heard that. Rom Trom. That's good.
Oh, thank you.
Uh-huh.
I do what I can.
I mean, Danny dropped out of Watch What Happens Live this week. He was supposed to be on and alongside Luke, which would have been a very dark episode, but he dropped out because that's how bad it is for him.
I always, with Danny, I always felt a cold gust of wind whenever he was on camera. I was like, something ain't right. Now, unfortunately, you have Janet, who is the messenger of some actually very correct takes.
Mm.
But sadly, Janet, for reasons I can't even quite unpack, is insufferable. I think she is. I truly, it's just like the.
But like, what is it? Like, for in your eyes, what is it?
It's honey, so hard to... I, it's not tangible for me. There's something so grating about her. Like, she's nails on chalkboard because it feels like she's very calculated. It feels like she's playing chess. It feels like her taking down these people correctly. Like, again, like, what she's saying about them isn't wrong. It doesn't come from this, like, sense of altruism, which I think is kind of what she wants it to come from, rather than her doing her job on a reality show. Which, again, I repeat, I appreciate whenever someone shows up to work. You know what I mean?
Of course. Like, of course.
I love a workhorse. I love a workhorse in a reality sense. I love when people understand what they're there to do and they go and do it. And I think Janet does it. But unfortunately, her delivery is so, like, not correct. And she's managed to alienate almost everybody. You know,
yeah, and she always wants an apology as well in the way that she wants it.
She's very stubborn. She's very stubborn and sanctimonious. And let me tell you, when you're on a reality show, sanctimonious doesn't quite work. It doesn't quite translate.
It doesn't quite translate. My biggest takeaway from the season so far is I'm just like, Mia, get out of there. Just like, get out of there. Get out of Santa Clarita. Like,
I think that the mask for Danny is coming off because I think actually, despite LOL having sexual assault allegations waged against him like last season, he and Nia as a couple have kind of come off scot-free, like, so far in the first few seasons. I mean, we've been very busy with Jax and Brittany. There's been other fires to put out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so Nia and Danny, to me, have always kind of, like, gone under the radar. And then I think this season, it's, like, because he's drinking and, you know, whatever, it's, like, the way he treats her. I mean, look, I've heard they're very, like, insanely Christian. Is that correct?
Definitely. Yeah. If they go to a mega church.
A mega church. Yeah. They're evangelical. So it feels to me very like trad wife gender roles to me. It feels very like, Nia, you were here to serve your husband. And if I'm not feeling respected, like all hell will break loose. That's kind of like the texture, I think, of it.
But the wild part is, I guess they just lack the self-awareness or like they didn't think through the fact that like that kind of situation never lands well on reality TV. And in fact, the editors are going to accentuate so many of those things that make it maybe even worse than it is. But like, I don't know. I don't know if it's the actor in him or what, but he just doesn't. He underappreciated like how he was going to come across by showing that part of himself.
That's the beauty of reality TV.
Of course.
That you have the people with the most to hide who are the first to sign up for a fucking TV show, which to me, I think is a kind of mixture of delusion and narcissism. I don't know. I mean, it's a recipe that we're eating up like slop. Like we love it. Give us more. But it is confounding as a viewer to be like, why would you, given the state of your life, be like, come on in, the water's warm. So you know what I mean? Like I would be like, let's pull the curtains and like do our dysfunction in private.
And that Southern accent is what Danny uses when Nia's trying to have a serious conversation with him.
So oh my God. I mean, she is surfing the waves of postpartum. She's profoundly
frustrated. So
why they're having four children is kind of beyond me. I mean, I'm sure it's like her evangelical roots. I don't know.
Probably.
But it's like they are so disconnected from each other. And
she's such a pageant girl, so she tries to smooth it over all the time, you know? Yep. And he's like, stop performing. And it's like, well, you're an actor who, like is also extremely performative. Like, it's just, it's honestly maddening. You guys, I'm obsessed with Quince. I've been trying to be a bit more intentional lately about what I wear, opting for clean, classic, comfortable looks that are easy to throw together and still have me looking put together when I walk out the door. Quince has become one of my go-tos because the fabrics feel elevated and everything just works without needing to overthink it. I find that when I have a closet full of solid, versatile clothes, it's easy to mix and match to come up with a chic look. And Quince is the easiest place to go to stock up on timeless pieces. My current favorite item from Quince is their Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweater, which I have in two colors, true navy and heather gray, and I wear them multiple times a week. It's that time of year where it might be gorgeous and sunny during the day, but it's a bit chillier at night. So I usually drape Quince's Mongolian cashmere crew neck over my shoulders for a laid-back, preppy look, and then I throw it on when the temperature drops. It's perfect. Lightweight, insanely soft, and it keeps me warm. And it's also less than $60, which is unthinkable for cashmere, but everything from Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/gabbingwithgib for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/gabbingwithgib for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/gabbingwithgib. I'm curious what you think about Jesse, Michelle, the addition of Lacey, who's trying to be Real Housewives 17 times.
Lacey is weird. And for someone to come on my screen in reality TV and me go, this person's weird. Like I'm having like I'm like, this is not right. I'm like, is this person AI? Like I truly am like, what is happening? Like that, it takes a lot for someone to come off as weird. Because baseline, if you're on a reality TV show, you're fucking weird. Period. That's where we're starting. Okay. That's where we're starting. you're not normal, period. Because no one normal would be like, absolutely, I want to sign up for this action, like, you know, whatever. So for you to come on and it to be a little David Lynchian, a little uncanny, like, that is crazy. Because I'm thinking, oh, how are they actually in real life? If they're coming off like this on camera, like, I wonder what the real life experience is. I don't know. I mean, I'm scared she's going to send me a cease and desist. I don't know. Like, some, like, although I will say this. She's growing on me.
And me too.
And seeing her dom the fuck out of Jesse.
100%.
Jesse is her sub. I mean, it is literally straight Pillion up in there. Mm. It is like, Jesse, you're sleeping on the floor. Here's your doggy bowl. Do you know what I mean?
Like, okay, Miss Lacey. It's literally what the vibes are.
It's wild, and I love it because he is a man that needs to be domed. He needs to be put in his place.
Which is so, it's so classic because it's the guy who asserts himself so much publicly and on camera, and he just wants to be fucking...
He wants to be humiliated. He wants to be humiliated. He wants to, and he is being humiliated on camera.
In those baggy gray underwear.
Oh, I swear, those editors, those are some cackling, vindictive queens at the editing bay who are literally just surfing the footage for that weird underwear. It's like, and then they make sure they always get a shot. They make sure.
I mean, this past episode, he's like ass up.
Bent over. I go,
he's waiting for Lacey. I'm just kidding.
That is crazy. And then, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is so unnatural. Like, there's no way in any world they would ever go on vacation together. I mean, it strains credulity. I mean, really, you're seeing the reality TV sausage at work here. Like,
totally.
You should never be on vacation with your, the husband that you're separated from in acrimony with his new girlfriend. There's just, it doesn't make any sense. It's so odd. But I mean, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to find people besides Brittany to really root for on the Valley. I don't know. They're not very likable to me.
I agree. It doesn't have that much humor on the show. Like, any genuine, like, laugh out loud humor, which I think is, like, to me, like, pretty much every Bravo show needs an element of that.
I mean, Rhode Island, I'm weeping. I mean, like, it's
weeping.
It's the funniest show on TV.
Let's talk about Rhode Island. Yeah, let's do it. I mean,
so, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to like it because I don't watch Jersey. Because I Jersey to me
never
was,
have, or you stopped?
I watched like the first two seasons, like way back in the day, and then I stopped because the fact that they were families was unsettling to me. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, we're like tearing apart families for screen time, like that. You know, with these Bravo shows, you find your line in the sand mm-hmm. of what you can
and yours is go.
Yeah, and mine is like, oh, it actually feels really disturbing to see these families tear each other apart for their show. You know what I mean? That doesn't feel good to me to watch. And so, you know, Bravo is such an interesting alchemy, like what makes for a good stew, because it needs to be dramatic, but not too dramatic. Do you know what I mean? It like mm-hmm. needs to be like funny, haha, but like not too silly, because there needs to be actual stakes. So, like, it's a real tightrope to get it right, because like we've seen over and over again when shows veer too dark, like The Valley or like Dorinda's drinking on Roni, blah, 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 where it just stops being fun. It's an interesting, like, it is a real formula that is very delicate and can go either way very quickly. Do you know
what
I mean?
Very much so. And like, we'll get back to Rhode Island, but like, that's what I was thinking about with Summer House and then The City, because I was like, the Amanda Kyle stuff is dark, but we're used to it. And also, Kyle will always inevitably like say something unintentionally extremely funny that they will keep in and focus on. Like this week, it was like, you're wearing a fucking raincoat in the summer, or like when she was like, there's a video, and he's like, okay, like they will always
obsessing over Carl's height,
Totally, like, you're a vagisil, you're 6'5", exactly. Like, they will always find that humor, and I think on the Valley, it's like crumbs. They're not giving them that at all.
I know,
but Rhode Island
is, I'm, honey, it's like a Christopher Guest movie. It's Christopher Guest movie.
Yes.
It's truly like, I mean, the casting is brilliant. Everyone is there. Everyone deserves to be there.
I agree.
Talk about a perfect alchemy. You know, I actually don't fully know their names
yet. It's okay. It's early. Which one are we talking about?
One of them is Ashley, right? She was on The Bachelor.
Ashley, I was on The Bachelor. Mm-hmm.
So she's the Greek chorus. She's the normal one.
Yeah, the outsider.
She's the outsider that's kind of like, you guys are cray, which we need.
Yeah.
We have Kelsey, who...
Sugar baby,
fun, kind of light, feuding with Rosie, who Rosie's the shitster.
Uh-huh. She's Ashley Darby, the Whitney Rose. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely Ashley Darby. That's such a good comp. And then we have Alicia, who is just a star.
Comedic gold,
like the NeNe Leakes, like that, like she's just a genius. Like everything she says, I mean, although NeNe Leakes was intentionally funny.
Alicia's unintentionally funny.
Yeah. I mean, her obsession with crackers. I mean, crackers. It's like her accent is just like, wow. Do you know what I mean?
I think about her in the premiere saying, my daughter likes Britney Spears. I like Britney Spears, like every day, basically.
I mean, she really, everything she says, it's like, correct. Like, yes, it's just incredible. Beyond. Liz is incredible. Liz is, I would say, on par with Alicia. Like, I love her so much. And I really like Jo Ellen, and honestly, getting into Jo Ellen's backstory of her mom basically like pulling a Magdalene Sisters and like sending her away.
Yeah.
Like, I truly was like, wait, what? Like, uh-huh. Becoming a warden of the state? Like, this is, I mean, that is trauma. And by the way, like, what's interesting about these shows is that they all have immense amounts of trauma because. And you know, they build their armor and they build their kind of fit, because I think that a lot of housewives in general have this sort of thing in common, which is that there's a certain level of delusion in all of them and an obsession with living a fantasy. Like, they're not quite anchored to real life, which is why we love watching them. But I think that is a defense mechanism from whatever trauma they experienced prior to coming on the show. And so getting into Joan's trauma, I was like, wow, that's pretty brutal. Like, she's been through a lot. I really like her. I think it's fascinating that in Rhode Island, the straight people act like gay guys in the sense that they all fuck each other. It seems like they all fuck each other.
Evidently.
It's literally like the Ice Storm Swingers key parties. Like, it is like understood. Like, I'm pretty sure Jo Ellen's sister's fucking her husband. I'm pretty sure Jo Ellen doesn't care. Like, I'm kind of confused. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. And they're like playing into it. I watch What Happens Live. And I'm like, what's going on here?
No, it's kind of like they have a real free love mentality, which like I'm kind of also, I will never stop laughing at them using the word ongoing. Do you know what?
All the time. She said an ongoing.
It's the ongoing. We're talking about the ongoing. And you're like, what the literal fuck are we talking? Like, what are we talking about? What we talk about when we talk about the ongoing, Raymond Carver. It is just, like, so delicious. Like, I truly think the way they do relationships is very, like, forward. And, I mean, of course, because they're so straight, they have to live, you know, like, behind this veil of secrecy and in whatever. But it seems like, honestly, they let it rip, sexually speaking. They really do.
And then, but then I guess they realize this was happening before the show. So then when the show comes around, that's all fodder in a way that they didn't think about, obviously, because they didn't know they're going to be on camera and have to talk about it and have to answer for it, which they don't have to answer for it, but...
Well, they kind of, that's their job. I mean, yeah, they kind
of. I know, but it's there's nothing wrong with a lot of it, technically.
There's
but
no, I mean, I wish that straight people would just be like, yeah, like, we fuck other people. It's like not that deep. Do you know what I mean?
More relationships would last longer, honestly.
Absolutely. I also, unfortunately, have this disease where I want all of the husbands of Rhode Island to run a train on me. I mean, I mean,
Jo Ellen's husband.
They're juicy. I love a juicy guy. I love a thick, juicy guy. So, like, that is just, like, that those men are made for me. And honestly, like, the skeevier, the weirder, the better. I honestly.
Maybe you should watch Jersey.
I know. Well, I've seen some pics and I'm like, unfortunately, I have not been to enough therapy to not be attracted to this person.
Sure.
I still need to go.
Would you want Joellen's sister to be added to the cast?
I mean, well, we'll see.
That's family. I know you don't like the family stuff.
I know. The family thing makes me uncomfortable, but I feel like there's a lot to unpack with them. So I would be interested in seeing more.
Yeah. And to me,
I would say friend of.
Yeah, friend of is good. Because I'm like, Liz has like queen bee energy in a different way than Joellen does. Joellen is like Liz is almost like a Karen Huger type where she's sort of like lords over things in a way.
Yes.
But Joellen's like sort of the Giselle where she's down to do the dirty work and she's like messy, but she knows she's the bad bitch and like she's not threatened by anybody.
But I know that's how they framed Joellen, but I have to say, like, she's coming off very likable to me.
Oh, no, I think she's very likable. I think that she's honestly my favorite, like in terms of the like actually being like a kind of well-rounded housewife. I think she's
like a real person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like she has the backstory. She gets to be messy. She's a good friend to a lot of people. Like she's a really good find for this show. With the Rula stuff, do you think that she? I'm so happy she's investigating. Like thank you for your service.
Sure,
but like she's doing a lot of investigating.
I mean, it's sort of silly. I mean, her faking sick. You know, in the bed, and I mean,
full face of makeup.
Yeah, a full face of makeup and being like, I'm deathly ill. It's kind of camp. I mean, like, you know, I obviously her husband's still having sex with someone else and she knows it. That's the thing. Like, she kind of like that to me. I'm like, you know, this it's happening. Like, it's a part of your marriage and you just don't want to act like, you know, that, you know, because you are in hetero hell and there's certain rules you have to subscribe to. But like, honey, you know it. He knows it. It's part of the texture of your relationship. Just own it. Be like Kelsey.
Lisa Rinna, own it. Yeah.
Well, be like Kelsey and be like, I'm fully going on a date with another guy while still living in my sugar daddy's mansion. I mean, that is Esther Perel is applauding you in the background.
Yeah, Rula. I can't with Rula and her husband, I'm like, what's the game plan here? Are you trying to keep up this charade forever? Are we waiting until the season stops airing and then you get divorced between seasons for season two? Like, I don't know what it is, but they're putting up a united front still to this day.
They are, but of course it will crack as it always does.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
But they remind me of, I don't know if you ever watched Real Housewives of DC back in the day, but they're very Salahi, the White House party crashers, like very like schemey, scammy vibes.
It's very Trumpian to just kind of double down and be like, you say the sky is blue. I actually say it's purple. And if I say it's purple, it's purple.
It's purple.
And then if a person just doesn't change their position and is just fully saying something is purple when it's not, you have no choice. You can't argue with crazy. So you're just kind of like, well, I guess it's purple, dot, dot, dot. I mean, I really do think I see a lot of people, I think, taking pages from the Trump handbook to like exist through the world. And I think there is a refusal. I mean, think about Meredith Marks in Salt Lake City of her plane meltdown. I mean, she really tripled down on there was nothing wrong. She didn't do anything wrong. Everyone was like, no, like you were actually having like a nervous breakdown in flight. And she just refused to acknowledge it. And because she would not even meet them an inch, they had to move on.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't think they're going to move on with Rula. I don't think they're going to move on.
Well, they shouldn't.
last thing about Rhode Island, Kelsey versus Rosie. I thought that was an instant classic Housewives fight that we saw this past Sunday.
You know, I have to confess, I fell asleep right before that happened.
Ryan. So
I don't quite know what happened. I know sometimes I pop a melatonin and I just go out, you know.
Well, it's you're in for a treat because it's
those accents are just so soothing to me, and they like it's like ASMR. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you just fall asleep to the sound of Alicia chomping on her crackers,
and I'm literally like, nyeh, nyeh. Like that's it for me.
Well, you're in for a treat because it's a truly special moment.
Love it. I love that they're feuding. I love that.
I want to ask you about Beverly Hills quickly.
Oh, God.
Were you, by the end of this season, Erica and Kyle versus Dorit, where were you landing through the reunion?
You know, it's tough. I think I am very over Kyle at this point for a lot of reasons. Number one, she does not share her life anymore. She just doesn't. And I don't think that should be allowed. She's a housewife. She's getting paid. There are huge parts of her life that she just will not share. And I think because she's grandfathered in and she has seniority, I think that she is held to a different standard. I don't know. I mean, her really not talking about Morgan, not really talking about the divorce. Like, I just think that it's not fair. Like, I don't think that she's really giving us that much. And so, and I do think with Dorit, Dorit is making it very hard to root for her in a way.
Yeah.
But because she's really fueled by anger and she's seeing red and she's really unable to see any kind of nuance, especially with Erica catching strays, which was really kind of unforgivable. That being said, when it just between Kyle and Dorit, I think I'm actually kind of team Dorit because I don't think Kyle gives a shit about Dorit. I really, really don't. And I don't think Kyle's given a shit about Dorit for quite some time. In fact, I think that once Dorit shared that text message from Kyle, Kyle was done. And I think that any kind of thing that you're seeing this season is really just concern trolling. Like, I don't think that it's genuine. I really don't. I think it's like,
that's for valid.
The story, I think that Kyle is pushing a storyline. It is much easier for her to push one with Dorit rather than share anything of herself. So she can call up, you know, Bose or whoever and be like, she's acting kind of erratic, knowing exactly what it is that she's
what's
doing.
Yeah.
She's been here for like literally 35 years. Like, she understands how the game is played.
Yeah.
She knows exactly what she's doing. Also, in this particular franchise, and this is part of the reason why I feel like it just needs to be recast, is that this is a franchise that will harp on Samantha.
Oh, my God.
And a word. And it drives me nuts, honey.
Every season.
And I cannot. Can someone please answer me why Roni has one bad season in COVID? In COVID. Okay. Otherwise, perfect cast, God tier. They get thrown out with the garbage. Meanwhile, Beverly Hills is able to just like glide by, giving us nothing. Okay. I don't understand. I really don't. They need a restructuring. They need a giant restructuring. I want to see like 80% of them gone. I really do.
Who would you keep?
It's such a good question. So obviously, somehow, if it's possible, I would love to keep Kathy as a friend of. And even Jennifer Tilly, who I love. I think Rachel Zoe is incredible. I think Rachel Zoe is a really important part of the cast. I loved her as an addition.
Me too.
I would maybe keep Erica.
Yeah.
I think you have to fire Kyle. I really do. Like, that number one is like, you have to fire her because I do think that she's holding back the show from being truly great. I really do. And Dorit is interesting. She's a raw nerve right now. She's being very honest, for better or for worse. And so she makes for very compelling TV. And I would definitely keep her on over Kyle because at least she's sharing parts of her life.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not you agree with her mode of delivery, which is pretty bad. Like, you have to admit that she's giving more of herself to the show. And then who else do we have?
Sutton, Bose, and Amanda.
Oh, Sutton off for sure. Beyond. I mean,
yeah,
she's
I agree
dead.
With that. Yeah.
I like Bose. I do like Bose. But I don't think she gives us that much. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I like her as commentary. I think she's really bright. But she doesn't quite get into she doesn't quite give of herself. Like, she's very good at, like, you know, being the commentator on what's happening and, like, and being perceptive. But she's kind of cagey when it comes to her own. I mean, I want people that are ready to bleed for this show, who are, like, ready to give their all. You know,
yeah, and Kyle's not there anymore. Bose is not really there. Yeah.
And by the way, like, out of, you know, understanding for Kyle, She's been there 40 million years. Totally. Like, she really has.
Take a break.
Like, we get that you don't want to have to, like, do... Yeah, but we also get that, like, you don't want to expose your entire life for the show. And that you've earned seniority by giving it your all for, like, you know, like, 10 years. And, like, you're like, I'm actually good. Like, mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I want to go. So, Sutton, definitely gone. Bo's maybe stay. Amanda, obviously gone, but I did love her. But there would be no season
Ruffled
without
feathers.
Amanda.
Yeah,
there'd be no season without Amanda, and that should be said. But she was a bad housewife in the sense that she really would not deviate from her narrative at all. And it was like she literally had like talking points for her business. Like she was sort of like a robot girl boss who like would not deviate from the message of selling her business on the show, and she just wouldn't. There was just no give with her. Mm-hmm, like she was very frustrating. She would not give up herself. She would not be vulnerable. And so, I mean, but again, like without her, this season would have been a total ambient.
But I think that you're right about Dorit's delivery being wrong. But I think that her delivery would like instantly improve if Kyle were not in the equation.
Yes.
You know, I think that's where a lot of the anger comes from. And then I also think that Erica versus Dorit at this point is much more compelling to me than Dorit versus Kyle. So like that, you could almost center the season around Erica and Dorit in some ways.
There's no way that I think Dorit and Kyle can be on this season, next season. No. I truly think that
again.
Friendship is torched, and I think that they really actively dislike each other. And there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go. There's no path forward. So like, that's reached the end of the road. I think Kyle needs to move on. And I think we need like younger Jen.
Some new people.
I think we need younger Jen. I mean, Rachel Zoe is such a great housewife. She's very good at reality TV because she came of age in a time where reality TV was more real and less scripted. Like Rachel Zoe was, if you watch the early seasons, that was a documentary. Like that was her having a meltdown over dresses, and it was genuine. Like she really it was truly LOL because it was like the same thing happening all the time, which is like, if we don't get this dress for Annie, like we're fucked. And you're like, okay. But like literally like you're like gripped. You know what I mean?
Beyond.
But she knows how to do it. She knows how to do it being herself. And she's not desperate. She's not plotting. She's not trying to get storyline. She's just very authentic, very herself. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like we need more of that energy.
Very much so. And it's actually, I was reading the essay in your book about your time in New York with like the early 2010s environment.
Were you around for that at all or no?
No, I was in college during that time. So I sort of like...
Drag me! You're like, I was in middle school?
No, but I remember like that whole environment, like... And I aspired to live in New York and be a writer and like work at one of these media companies. And like I sort of graduated into sort of like the pivot to video, essentially. Like that was sort of the second. Yeah. And so like, but you at some point you mentioned like that some of those blogs and some of those websites at the time that were huge would like be recapping those early seasons of Real Housewives and probably Rachel Zoe. Yeah, exactly. And like, do you yearn for those days a lot, like the early reality TV and also just like culture around
time? We'll never get it back because there was just people did not know. So that's how you got NYC Prep. That's why you got Gallery Girls. That's why you got early seasons of Rachel Zoe, is that people did not know how the sausage got made. They did not know how to self-produce. So you just got more authentic stories. And now there is a savviness that I think everybody has, everybody, not people just in reality TV. I think we just live in a very savvy time, a very self-aware time. And when you have that, undoubtedly, the stories are going to suffer. So the one season of Hey Paula that aired on Bravo in 2007 is better than like 12 seasons of Beverly Hills combined, because it was just like way more raw and crazy and unlike anything you've ever seen. Do you know what I mean? Like NYC Prep was better than most things on the air now. Like that season of TV was crazy.
That's why you need to go watch Real Housewives of DC. That was like 2009.
Okay.
It's fucking, it's like 8 episodes. It's really, honestly great. They like re-released on Peacock like 2 years ago and I watched it again. It's pretty damn good. And it's very much reflective of what you're talking about, honestly.
Oh, I love that. Okay. I'm all down.
I'm giving you homework.
Okay. I love that. I also, I'm running out of content for Bravo. I'm like dumpster diving now.
Well, that's also, I think, sort of why, to me, Ladies of London hit so well, the reboot, because like it wasn't fully that way, but it had some elements of what you're talking about, which is like these women like didn't seem to come on with an agenda, to be honest. Like,
no, Ladies of London was incredible. I never saw the first couple seasons. So when it came out, I was like not interested because I was just okay. I don't know these people, whatever. Then I kept reading rumblings online about how it was actually incredible. So I dove in, and honey, wow.
Thank God.
Iconic, incredible TV. Who is the person? Oh my God, I keep forgetting her name. The one with the bird?
Oh, Martha. Beyond.
Martha.
Queen.
Martha is the perfect reality TV person. She is vulnerable. She is raw. She's real. She's fucking funny. Like, she's like basically like a less tragic version of Sonia Morgan.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? And oh my God, the first two episodes where that woman quits because she realizes in real time, Dara, where she realizes in real time what being on a reality TV show means. And you can see her, like the meme of that woman doing math, like her going, wait, I don't want to do this. And yes. By the way, like when people are that way, I'm like, did you not watch one episode of TV? Like, did you not understand that you were coming to this dinner and you were going to get Benny Hanna to filth? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you were going to get like totally skewered.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you were going to get absolutely chopped up and served on a tray.
Yeah, and she quits not over the fact that they're accusing her of being a madam, but over the fact that they're accusing her of talking shit about her friend. That's why she quit. Uh-huh.
Oh, and when she goes to the producer, she goes, I was talking shit about my friend. And then she goes back being like, I was not talking shit about you. And you're like, do you understand people are following you?
No.
It's so nuts.
It's so nuts. And then we have a show like Southern Hospitality, which like to me is... I really enjoy this show.
It's incredible.
But it's like, it is a post-social media reality show. And in some ways, it's like, it's proof that you can find pockets of people that can make for a good show still at this point. Because sometimes I do doubt that. And Southern Hospitality is like, okay, there's this group of Gen Z kids who work at this place who like, I think it's because they don't live in LA or New York. They live somewhere else where like they didn't move there to like aspire to be a star necessarily. Yes. Like, that's the big element of it. But like this season of Southern Hospitality is fucking amazing.
It's incredible. It's better than anything Southern Charm has done in years. And yes. I think the key is that when in doubt, just find people in their 20s working at a restaurant. It's honestly like that is always the formula because number one, they work psychotic schedules that are conducive to just partying all night. Number two, they're actually friends. Like, they're genuinely good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the relationships that you're seeing are totally real. And I think this season of Southern Hospitality is so amazing. Like, I just love them. I really do. And, like, they have such fun. I mean, I will say Emmy...
Yeah.
Worries me. And I'm like, and I actually like, I feel, look, I understand she is the agent of chaos you kind of need. She's like the bomb being dropped into every dynamic. That being said, she seems truly unwell. And there's something like unsettling watching her where it's like not that fun. And you're kind of like, somebody go check on her and like make sure she's good. Do you know what I mean?
No, yeah. It's like the things that you think should rattle her don't, or they do it in a way that's like totally bizarre and unexpected, and then like she's also incapable of learning anything either, like, or like actually understanding not all.
In
the
fact,
situation.
In fact, she doubles down. Like, I think that
triple and quadruple,
and like I truly think she hates everybody. I do. I truly think she hates everybody, and like she is so like what she did to, oh my God, what's his name? Why am I forgetting
Brad.
To meet Brad? Was so unforgivable. And the fact that she like can't own it in any kind of way. And in fact, like, starts talking shit about, like, apologized to him and then immediately starts talking shit about him around town and making even worse accusations is just confounding.
What's happening, I think, is her off-camera now fiance is essentially using her as, like, a rag doll to, like, control what she says and does, and she just does whatever he says. Like, I think...
I know.
He's literally like, a remote control operating her, I'm pretty sure. Like, that's what it feels to me.
I totally agree. What does break my heart is that I loved Lake last season. I loved her.
I know.
And this season, man, what's
she's like? It feels like she's co-signing Emmy, and it's like,
it's weird.
It's weird. It's like, I don't understand it. I really, really don't. It's because her and Michael's together felt like such a good addition to the show last season, and
I know. I love Michael's. I love Michael.
Me too.
He's so sweet.
He's so sweet. And like him and TJ together and it just feels like they, Southern Hospitality is like, we're talking about, you know, you say, are straight people okay? Southern Hospitality is like the gayest show on Bravo at this point in terms of their cast.
It's effortlessly gay. It's also effortlessly diverse in a way that doesn't feel ham-fisted.
At all.
Or like feel like beep, bop, boop, like. Especially for a place like Charleston that feels so white, you're like, wow, like this really is a diverse, eclectic cast that is representative of Gen Z. And yeah, I mean, also, I love Grace Lilly. I do.
Oh, she's an icon. Sorry. Like she's troubled and she's like going through it.
Well, honey, I was not expecting that. I was not
Me
expecting
neither.
That. Because before she admitted that, I will say, like, I loved making fun of her.
Right.
And I thought
there's a layer to it.
Now there's a layer, and I'm like, oh, you're dealing with drug problem. Like, I feel really bad for you. Oh my God. Also, I feel like it's so obvious that Maddie can't stand Joe Bradley. Cannot stand.
I was gonna ask you what you thought about them as a couple.
I mean, it's like, I feel like she's gonna dump him, right?
I mean, he's so in love with her. I feel
he's
like
obsessed
and
with her. She does not feel.
So why do you think she's with him then?
I don't know. I can't. I mean, I think a lot of people stay in relationships that don't serve them anymore because they're scared or they feel guilty. I mean, there's a lot of. Also, I love her sponsor. I love
Me
when
too.
Anyone wanders onto reality TV that is not meant to be there because they're so real and like so normal. And so, like, it is always so delicious when you see someone just, like, wander onto their set and kind of be like, oh, okay. Like they're
And they're really talking real and they're cutting through all the bullshit. Yeah, I love the sponsor. Yes.
I know. And I feel like with TJ and Michaels, it's so sad because I think TJ is from, an older generation, even though he's, like, eight years older than Michaels. But, like, still, that's pretty in gay time. That's sizable.
I agree.
I think with TJ, sadly, I feel like he needs to read The Velvet Rage. Like, I feel like there's so much repression.
I agree.
And still self-loathing. And I actually think Michaels is the more kind of evolved, younger. I think he's less self-hating than TJ is. And like, I don't know. I feel like weirdly, TJ has a lot to learn from Michaels a little bit.
I think so, too. And I think he probably in the back of his head is like really grateful that Michaels is there, because I think that he's slowly but surely sort of showing a little bit more of that side of him. But I agree. There's still a long way to go for him. And I think, again, Charleston is a tough place for someone to have to do that in.
Yeah.
And I understand. You know, I understand why he's got. Yeah, no. And like, I mean, one season he was talking about all the straight, like the closeted straight guys he hooks up with. And it's like that, of course, that's what life is like there, you know.
But also, I think that if I was to like therapize him, I think that why he keeps going back to straight guys is because he has his own intimacy issues. And I think it's much safer for him to be in a dynamic
that space
that's not going to lead to anything that is very like one night standy, rather than give himself completely. Because it's one thing to admit that you're gay. It's another to actually like let yourself love another man. It's just different.
Mm-hmm. There has never really been like a long, successful gay reality show. And I've never really been able to pinpoint why. What's your theory on that? Like, if this was like 2010 and you were going to write like a thought catalog piece about this. What would be like your thesis statement about why that doesn't work or hasn't worked?
Well, first of all, we're completely dismissing For the Love of Dilfs, which is in Canada, which is incredible. If you haven't seen
it, never seen it. Okay,
you're dismissing the A-list on
but
logo.
But that didn't run for that long.
You're right. These are not long. No. The Fire Island show didn't run long.
No,
Finding Prince Charming didn't
run
long.
They've existed for sure. But
I mean, maybe it's like generic for me to say this, but like I don't know, good old fashioned homophobia. I mean, like it's like, you know, like yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, why have we not had a real housewife that's like a gay guy? Why have we not had, you know what I'm saying?
Mark worked on Ladies of London, so maybe that's a good testing ground.
I know. Oh, Mark was so tough. Mark was tough. Like, Mark was like, to me, like, I could just feel with every greeting this kind of like intensity, this kind of like unbridled rage that was living just underneath this
expression. Yeah.
As a gay guy, you just identify immediately. You're like, mm-hmm. Oh, I know what this is. And then when he had like truly a nervous breakdown, when Margot called him creepy, I mean, you understood. You're like, oh, this man has endured so much abuse.
Yeah.
And now it's manifested in this way that is so rigid and kind of like, I am gay clown. I'm gay monkey. I'm dancing for my dinner. Like, hee hee ha ha ha. Like, yeah. Oh, all his friends are women. You can probably tell he's like probably identifies as like being like not that kind of gay guy vibes.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Uncomfortable talking around about sex and blah, 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 which we actually saw on the show. He was like uncomfortable. Like, you know, when I was like, babe, you're getting like fucking like you're, you know, God knows what you're doing Tuesday at a 2 p.m. But basically, I don't know. I really don't, other than like maybe that would be perceived as too niche. You know what I mean? Which I'd argue that it's not. At all.
No, but it's like culture's too used to, is still used to or wants us to be like the funny side character more so than.
And in the grand tradition of a lack of representation, gay men now have to see ourselves in women like Alicia, people that are outsized, delusional, camp. Like that's our representation. And that's what we've been identifying with forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, like, you just know that if there was like a great show about gay guys all hanging out together, that like gay people would be the first ones to tear it down too, because that's what always happens.
Honey, I mean, don't even, we eat our own so much. I mean, I will say, and who knows, because it could change, like I write gay stuff for gay people. I always have when it comes to my work. Like, I really don't censor myself. I mean, much to my, you know, probably agent's chagrin, I'm not like, you know, writing like, you know, books centered towards like white women where like, you know, gay guys get their dicks chopped off and whatever. And I will say, like, getting gay men's approval is really important, because I know how complicated it is when we see our representation reflected back at us. And I feel lucky so far that I've made things that gay guys have actually liked. I mean, I'm sure tons of shit has been talked about me across gay bars across Los Angeles and whatever, which, like, God bless. Like, that, I understand completely. Like, get it out, girl. But I think, in general, I've been very heartened to see my work be received well by gay guys. Like, it's important to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think it totally makes sense why. And, like, even, like, when I got the copy of Inspiration Porn, like, I went straight to the essay called Provincetown, because I was like, I want to,
I thought you were going to say The Slut Diaries.
No. Yes, that one. But Provincetown, to me, it was sort of like, that place is really special to me as well. I love it there. And like, I wanted to hear about it in writing from somebody else. Like, it's just something, I think that gay guys, like, we do want our stories reflected back at us. But for some reason, then there's the next sort of intuition is to criticize it or to, I don't know what it is.
Not a lot of gay stuff gets made. When it gets made, it gets put under a magnifying glass. It has this burden of having to represent a large swath of the population.
Totally.
We're not a monolith. So whenever something gets made that's gay, that doesn't reflect our experience, we're triggered. And also, there's just a lot of like self-loathing at work. You know, I think that like sometimes in work, you know, you see parts of yourself reflected back at you. I mean, I really loved Bros. I know it was a very kind of hot button.
I did too.
I loved it too. And I would say that a lot of gay guys didn't, because I think that Billy played a character that was very spiky, very unlikable. And represented parts of gay men that are really difficult to contend with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think exist in all of us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think but seeing it kind of so baldly addressed and shown, I think made gay guys kind of uncomfortable.
Definitely.
I don't know. I ride for bros. I ride.
I want to. You're making me want to rewatch it. I haven't seen it in a couple of years.
It's
I loved
so
it.
It's so good. It's so I funny. Loved it. And it's like,
yeah.
And I was so proud of it for going there. Do you know what I mean?
Me
like,
too.
It really went there. Like, it was like, it really showed like the body image stuff. You know what I mean?
I think it will age well. I think it will have its moment where it's like reaccepted or something. Like, that is,
I hope so. But you know, yeah. Like, that was hard. And you know, And gay men really put that out to dry, and it, you know, it didn't recoup at the box office, or maybe it did, I don't know. But it, you know, the whole narrative around it was like, you know, the box office weekend for opening weekend wasn't great. And then guess what? Gay stuff doesn't get made for a couple years after that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I went out with my movie just by looking at him, the adaptation, the week Bros came out, which was not good.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
And it was like a resounding no, because it was in the wake of that perceived failure. And that's what happens, is that when we don't show up, when we're so eager to kind of attack our own community, like, we don't get other queer stories. Unfortunately, I wish that we lived in a world where we didn't have to even think about this kind of stuff, where we could kind of criticize and do whatever and add to the discourse and whatever and have no real implications, you know, with what gets made down the line. But unfortunately, it just doesn't work that way. You know what I mean?
Where does the Just by Looking at Him adaptation stand? Are you still shopping it around?
Is it being made? I thought it was dead. And then, like, it was so funny. Like, my friend Craig, who is a director, was like, movies are never dead. And I was like, no, I think it's dead. And he's like, no, it's not. Don't worry, it'll come back to life. So right now it's in a coming back to life period, which, like, who the fuck knows?
That's hopeful. Like, I know, but the book is too good to not.
Oh, thank you, sweetie.
I really did. I really loved it so much when it came out. So,
oh, thank you.
I really hope that comes to fruition at some point. And it will.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've been working in this business now for like 13 years. And so I have to admit, I'm pretty desensitized a little bit. Like, for my own protection. And it's like, I'm like a shark. I don't stop moving. So, like, I don't ever really think about it. Like, if ever I get news about it, it's like exciting. But I'm never sitting here being like, what's happening? What's happening? What's happening? It's just, I can't do it.
That's a much healthier way to be than I'm sure a lot of people are in your position.
Well,
so.
No, I mean, I have been there. I have been there where I'm like checking in. And it's a really horrible experience. It just, like, it sucks. You're just like pushing a boulder up a hill, and then you're like, okay. So there's certain projects, Just by Looking at Him being one of them, that I kind of have to remove myself from for my own sanity.
Yeah.
And look, if any gay guy listening to this who's really rich wants to finance my gay horror movie, because, like, guys, gay sex is bad. Heated rivalry.
So back. We're so back.
We're fucking. And we're fucking again.
We're fucking. You're also fucking. You're fucking an inspiration porn.
Oh, that's a good
such
segue.
A great, yeah, such a great collection of essays, and it's out this Tuesday. I think it's going to be the when this interview comes out. So,
oh, fab.
Yeah. So everyone, wherever you get your books, Inspiration Porn, Ryan O'Connell. Yeah. Also, Just by Looking at Him, go get that too, because I also think that, you know, you do such a good job of bringing your voice and talking to you into your writing. It's you. And so if you guys enjoyed this, pick up Ryan's other work. Ryan, I so appreciate you being so generous with your time. I hope you feel, you know, the weight lifted of getting your Bravo trauma dump out. Okay.
I feel cleansed. I feel so much lighter.
Good.
I mean, maybe I won't get my period this month, and I won't feel, you know, maybe I won't, you know, maybe I won't feel like I need to start a podcast about Bravo shows this month.
Well, so, I think, listen, I'm going to say this. You, how about once a quarter, you come on Gabbing with Gib, collect all your thoughts, and you can just, we can do a hot take episode once every few months.
Oh my God, that would be haboon.
This is delightful.
I would love to do that. Yes.
Ryan, I really appreciate it. And it was great to reconnect. Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.